The Mincing Rascals are sponsored by Kelly Cruises. Imagine yourself aboard the most luxurious ship ever built. Come with me, John Williams, and not Eric Zorn, but my wife Brenda will be there on the brand new Regent Seven Seas Explorer with large rooms and the largest suite balconies at sea. The Explorer is large enough to offer 9 different ways to dine, but at 750 passengers, this ship is cozy. April 23rd, next year, we're going to sail the beautiful blue Mediterranean. This will be my third time there, and I tell you, it is spectacular every single time. We go from Barcelona to Rome. We explore Spain, France, and Italy, and it's all-inclusive. So once you get on the ship, you don't need a nickel for shore excursions or wine, beer, spirits, gratuities, food. Everything is included. It's our 10th trip with Kelly Cruises. We all become friends, and a lot of you travel time and again with us. I'd like that to include you. So enjoy special savings if you book by the end of this month, including a $500 per suite shipboard credit. The number to call is 630-990-1111, 630-990-1111. Today is Thursday. It's June 29th, 2017. It's 11:15 in the morning. I'm John Williams. These are the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast recorded at the studios of WGN Radio. Portions of this can be heard on my Saturday show at 11:10 a.m. on WGN.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of the Business Lunch on WGN, and I'm bleeding about the face.
Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN+.
I'm Eric Zorn, the low-IQ, crazy columnist from the Tribune. I'm here Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
Today, just minutes ago, in fact, the president tweeted the following quote. I heard poorly rated At Morning Joe speaks badly of me. Don't watch anymore. Then how come low IQ crazy Mika, along with Psycho Joe, came to Mar-a-Lago 3 nights in a row around New Year's Eve and insisted on joining me? She was bleeding badly from a facelift. I said no! Exclamation point. Fellas, I am surprised at how surprised I am. I'm shocked at how shocked I am. I don't know why. For some reason, this particular tweet really troubles me. I don't think I've felt sadder about this president in a long time.
There was a spokesman for NBC who said he never thought he would consider it beneath his dignity to respond to the president of the United States on Twitter. But even responding to it just brings everybody down.
It's not beneath my dignity to respond to this. First of all, I don't think Morning Joe, which is the show they're referring to, is low rated anymore.
Oh, no. It's doing really well. In fact, the ratings have been increasing. I was watching today ahead of the tweet, and one of the things they were talking about, there's a conservative columnist for the New York Times who's gotten a lot of play recently.
Oh, yeah, right. Because
Stephen Brill, not Brill, but anyway, so he had written, though, about how
Hold on. You done with that, Zorn?
I thought I turned the ringer
Fair
off.
Enough. Keep going, Steve.
At least
Bertrand.
It wasn't the theme from Dr. Zhivago this time. I was watching Morning Joe this morning, and one of the segments I saw was they were talking to the conservative New York Times columnist, that guy.
The climate change denier.
Yeah,
he's
right. And he's written a column about how he's abandoned Twitter because he considers it, I think it was pornography for the mind or something like that, that it is appeals to our most base senses, and how he's walked away. And then you have this tweet from the president, which that only speaks to everything they were talking about on that show as he ripped that show.
Well, I think this is as bad. It comes precariously close to the, you know, grab women by the, you know. But it's also on the heels this week of him hitting on a reporter, a photo
from
opportunity in the Oval
I
Office. You haven't
that.
Seen? Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, now, come on, Scott. He flirted with her.
The president of the United States was hitting on a reporter from Ireland. It told her how pretty her smile was. And, I mean, and then you have this. I mean, he's a sexist pig. I mean, there's nothing, no other way to put it.
And Scott's the conservative voice on this panel. I have nothing to add to that.
Well, I also believe in treating people with manners.
I think we're completely missing the point here, though. Eric, I'll let you speak in a second, but doggone it, Melania and Ivanka. Melania, the First Lady's platform as First Lady is anti-bullying.
Anti-cyberbullying.
And when asked about that, her spokesperson today said that my husband has always said, if you hit him, he'll hit you back 10 times harder. In other words, if you bully him, he will bully you 10 times
but
harder.
Political commentary, the kind that is practiced on Morning Joe, is not bullying. They're not I mean, I don't understand. That's a ludicrous thing to say.
Well, I'm just telling you what their response was, that if you hit him, he'll hit you back 10 times harder.
Even if it is bullying.
This is cyberbullying. Mika, this is insane. I don't know where to begin. I'm just giving you my visceral, honest reaction. I'm almost disappointed in the president or the presidency. This is so mean. It's so inappropriate.
It's so small.
It's so small. It's so puny. It's so personal. It's so everything a president shouldn't be.
It's third grade.
It really is.
And think of it. This is a man who has reached great heights. I mean, he has reached great heights in his life. And this is what he's thinking. You know, not that he was pissed off by it or any of that, but he's like, well, this is how I'm going to get him back. I'm going to call him Psycho Joe and Low IQ Mika.
Low-rated, low IQ.
That'll show
it. And by the way, I'm going to – and really, the thrust of this, I don't know if we'd be talking about this were it not for the very end.
About the facelift?
The facelift, because really what he's doing is he's trying to embarrass her, hurt her by outing her for having had a facelift, and then to – in our minds, paint an awful image of her bleeding and puffy and swollen.
As though he hasn't had work done. I mean, you think that hair is natural on a 71-year-old man? I don't think so.
Can I just say, I've been working in radio for more than 30 years. And when any time someone comes up and complains to me and says, I don't really listen anymore, that tells me they're listening.
Well, he said, right.
I don't listen to this show anymore. Right.
Yeah.
Well, and this comes on the heels, of course, of this news in the Washington Post about this fake Time magazine cover that shows like the smallness of this man and his brittle ego. I mean, just to recap that story, the Post found that at least five golf clubs have this on the wall framed Time magazine cover that's faked. It's like photoshopped.
Okay. Can I go back a couple weeks? I'm sorry, Eric, I didn't mean
that. No, that's all I have to say about that.
Kristen.
Oh, I doubt that.
Kristen, a couple weeks ago, you know, said, I've had enough of this.
Kristen,
I don't want to talk about these tweets because it's the same old thing and it's irrelevant. We had this conversation in the newsroom this morning. All right, is this a new story or what exactly is this? And I think that's my question for you guys. What exactly? I mean, I haven't done it in my newscast. The talk shows have talked about it.
You have not reported this as a news story?
As a news story, I haven't. I probably will later in the day when I have their official, like Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Boy, she's going to have a good day today,
isn't
she?
The tweet speaks for itself. That's what they'll say.
She did the bullying thing. She goes, you know, he won't be bullied by anyone, even Hollywood or something. But my point is, what is the significance or relevance of this story? And it seems to me that it's like that we have a petty, unqualified man is president of the United States. I mean, I think that's what makes it a news story.
Okay, and by the way, I think this is true. The president sets the tone for a lot of things. If you are talking about cyberbullying, if you're talking about mistreatment of certain groups of people, when the president acts this way, it gives license to people, maybe not consciously, but it's out there, to beat up, to attack, to counterattack, to bully other people. If he doesn't like the fact that he is a leader in that regard, that's too bad. He is. People will follow his lead.
This is a man who's working on a bill, or maybe he's not, to rewrite the American healthcare system. And on one hand, and it's the same brain who thinks this is a logical, appropriate reaction. It's the same brain.
And his daughter, who we thought would be a brain in the White House, has been silent about this. It may change by the time you're hearing this podcast, but the First Lady's office has said, we'll hit you back 10 times harder if you do this. She didn't say it's inappropriate. She didn't say, I'm sorry that my husband... Think of all of the ways that Ivanka or Melania could have by now responded that would have saved face for their relationship with their husband slash father, but at least addressed the mistake the president just made. Think about how the president could have apologized and said...
He never apologized. When was the last time he apologized for anything?
Ever.
Never.
He's a child.
I'm making brackets, Scott.
Yeah,
I have a 16-team bracket, but I don't have all 16 teams filled in on Facebook. I'm asking people to tell us what are the cuckooist Trump bracket moments.
You've got a new one this morning.
Well, Scott, Eric, the reason I even did this to begin with, we've all sort of talked about some of these incidents, but when the Time magazine story came out, I thought, boy, that's right up there with the Cinco de Mayo, I love Mexicans love me picture in front of a taco bowl. And so I thought, okay, well, if we did brackets, what would win? Based on earlier this week, the story of the Time magazine photo, now the number one seed just fell into my lap the next day. Here it is, the tweet about the Morning Joe show.
What else is on? What else is in your brackets?
Well, I at the time my order was number one, the escalator ride when he comes down and announces in June of 15 his candidacy. The jazz combo at the climate change Rose Garden announcement.
Smooth jazz.
He had a 4-piece jazz combo playing to loosen up the crowd when he said that we don't care if the world blows up or heats up. Number three, Covfefe. Number four, the Abe handshake. 5, the fake Time magazine cover story. 6, the inauguration crowd controversy. 7, the Obama wiretapped Trump story. The Billy Bush tape I have on there at number 8. Now, that was pre-election.
But it was post-escalator.
But it was post-escalator when it became an issue.
We learned about it, yeah.
So I'm going to allow it. Number 9, the taco salad Cinco de Mayo pick. Number 10 I have is John Miller, the fake character he created. But I'm going to throw that out because that was pre.
Okay, but can we just explain that? Because he would call reporters and pretend he was a spokesman for Donald Trump named John Miller when it was clearly him. This is what he would do as Donald Trump. In Trump Tower, would call reputable reporters and say, this is John Miller speaking for Donald Trump.
And there was love.
And he can get all the women he wants.
That's the sort of things he would talk about. And by the way, he's out with this really hot actress, and she's, I don't want to say who it is. You could hear the voice, you could hear his vocabulary, but the reporters on the other end weren't so tuned in. Anything else that you guys would stick on the list that's missing?
I've got a couple. One is when he was threatening to sue all the women who were accusing him of sexual assault. And another one was when he was photographed behind the wheel of a truck, you know, holding both the wheel in both hands, looking like he was making it. Yes. That was a great Trump moment.
Something big happened that day, right? There was some. Was it the House?
Was it the day that the health care bill failed in the House?
Something like that.
Right.
When they pulled it, they pulled it.
It became a meme for how the legislation
the first
was
time
going
around.
Or whatever it was.
Well, you got to put the Call Me Better Hope There on tapes.
Thing on
bad
there.
Tweet. Yeah, that's got to belong.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I straddle the line between significance,
silly
importance,
and
just silly and inane. And some of them do both.
I mean, I love that when he's talking about the chocolate cake. Remember when he's talking about how when they were doing the missile strikes on Syria and he was having dinner with the Chinese premier, right? And then he was explaining what was going on and he went off into this tangent about how lovely the chocolate cake was.
How about his threat to bring to the Hillary Clinton debate the 5 women that he said her husband had assaulted?
But that wasn't
at the debate then. They did a press conference.
It was before the debate. It was right before the debate.
But I think that could make the list of 16.
I think hitting on the Irish reporter is another one.
This week. We can do 16 this week.
refusing to shake hands with Angela Merkel?
Yeah.
Or presenting her with the bill.
We still don't know if he's done that, but he said he was going to give her the NATO bill. Here's what you owe, Angela. Do you have your checkbook handy?
It's going to be like the NCAA tournament. They're going to say, well, we have 64 teams, but we actually need 68.
Maybe we can get Barack Obama to fill out a bracket.
So
canceling the Ramadan dinner, which is the first president to do that in 20 years.
The Chicago Public Schools, it's been revealed, will pay per day $70,000 in interest charges on the money that they had to borrow to keep the schools afloat. The state is delinquent in its payment to the schools. The schools need money. They borrowed it and at an interest rate because our credit is bad, 6+%. Is it 4 or 6-something%? I think it's over 6%, and it's costing them $7,000.
It's like a payday loan is what they've got.
It really is. Did Guido give them this money? Goldman Sachs is reputable. This is, I guess, our own doing. But I was saddened that we are, you know, think of what you could do. You could hire a teacher per year, per day, at what we're losing in interest payments.
But wouldn't you love to have bought some of those bonds at that interest rate? I mean, that's crazy.
So somebody's making money on the other end.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, well, CPS is junk, is rated to junk. City of Chicago is there. The state now is one tick away. As we record this, we're a vote away from Moody's and the others making Illinois the first state in history to have junk bond ratings.
New York
bond.
Didn't have that?
It did not.
No, not a state.
No. Forward to New York City, dropped
in.
And
it's very interesting. You mentioned this because there's another element that's going on in the state, which is we are paying $2 million a day as a state in overdue fees that we owe to companies that do business with the contractors that do business with the
really?
State.
That's
so,
in the
you know,
contract?
We've got this pile of $14 billion of unpaid bills, but we're accruing penalties at the rate of $2 million a day. And think what you could do with $2 million a day. I mean, this is all why this financial irresponsibility really matters. Why, when you have a low credit rating, it really costs you actual money and actual programs and actual
services.
I'm glad
you said that. I don't understand $300 million. I don't understand $12 billion. I understand $70,000. That's more than a teacher makes on average.
I could break it down by minute if you want.
I don't want to. No, but you know, I can get my head around $1 million or $2 million a day or $70,000. That's a stunning waste of money and resources.
Well, let me throw this out here, by the way. The tax increases they're proposing down in Springfield right now to fix their problems is going to be $1,125 per household. That's the tax increase.
Oh, the state income tax increase.
All the taxes they're talking about increasing, the sales tax,
income
tax. Because
when I brought this up last week, nobody seemed to care that the state income tax might increase, and retroactively to January, so it'd even be worse right away. You guys seem to be Jake, to use your phrase, what it's going to take, you guys.
I'm not Jake with it, but I certainly understand it. I understand why they need to do it. Our state income tax is really low. It's been really low compared to states everywhere. It has been, Scott. We have a low income tax
rate.
That's
the one thing you can point to.
I know. We don't pay other taxes and fees. Do you have a sticker on your car?
No.
What are you paying?
According to Forbes magazine, we are the fourth highest tax burden in the country.
But that's because of property taxes, which is there to make up for
property
the fact
taxes,
that our state income taxes are low.
So good for us. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's all money out of your pocket. If they take it from this reason or that reason, it's money out of your pocket. Say this one low tax isn't that high is no consolation.
During this budget standoff, we've been spending about, I think the calculation I did, $16 million a day more. The state's been spending $16 million a day more than it's taking in. Because the income tax rate is at 3.75% right now. It was 3 for many years. We boosted it to 5 for 5 years during the Quinn administration. It reverted back to 3.75. Just about everybody acknowledges that we need – if we're going to make up the gap that we've opened up here, we have to raise these taxes.
Yeah.
And we can complain about it, but the fact is we've been living off all this borrowed money all this time. So the idea that we could do this without tax increases is naive.
But they're tax increases without any evidence of serious reforms on spending.
What are you going to do, Scott?
Well, you're talking about, some of them are talking about across the board, which may be the only approach we have that's practical, because Madigan, the speaker for life down in Springfield, proposed his budget. It's $5 billion out of kilter with absolutely no way to say how you're
going to make that.
Yeah.
What budget are you talking about? The one that the House is dealing with right now spends less money than Rauner wants to spend.
Well, the one Madigan proposed.
Just recently.
It was a $5 billion increase in spending as we have
now. But that's less than what Rauner wants to spend. It's less than the Republican wants to spend. I don't see why are you blaming Madigan for this? Rauner wants to spend more money.
You're supporting Madigan on this?
I'm just asking Scott to say he's blaming Madigan for this, but Rauner's budget is bigger than Madigan's.
I'm blaming Madigan for being the speaker for the last 2,000 years in this state and getting us into this mess.
Isn't it on all of them? I mean, really, don't you think, Steve, that even the good ones, if ever there were a case for just a wholesale dismissal of the legislative body or the executive branch and start all over again, Illinois would be it.
I remember back when Mayor Daley used to call Jim Edgar Governor No, because Governor Jim Edgar used to say no to all of these grand proposals. No, we can't afford it. No, there's not a way to pay for it.
And now I get email all the time from Republicans saying, well, this is all part of the Madigan-Edgar cabal that's been going on for the years, the combine that they talk about, that everybody's to blame except Bruce Rauner, who has created this. He's the only governor we've had in forever who hasn't been able to come to a budget agreement with the legislature.
Yeah, but isn't it possible, Eric, that his stubbornness may be the medicine that this legislature has needed?
You started it. $70,000 a day to CPS, a couple million dollars a day for the government. You know, that's what it's costing.
Yeah.
That's what his stubbornness is costing, real money.
Oh, well, okay. But I mean, I'm under the impression that any solution that the Democrats are going to come up with doesn't fix this either. That maybe the governor's intransigence on this is going to actually impose some discipline.
They want a property tax freeze. Both parties seem to be on board with a property tax freeze. Property tax freeze is like incredibly stupid public policy. It hamstrings local governments. property tax has nothing to do directly with state government. State government doesn't collect the property tax. It doesn't spend the property tax. But they want to come in and exert control over this over these local bodies, saying you can't raise taxes if your pension payment needs go up, if your education needs go up, if we keep starving you of funds, you can't raise your taxes in order to cover to pay for your schools. You can't do that, local governments. Well, that's why just about every local government, every local official saying, no, don't do this. Both parties are on board with this. This is the kind of thing that Rauner has been insisting on. But he won't sign off on it because the Democrats want to exempt areas that have extremely troubled schools or have real big pension problems, which Chicago has. So they're at this. What's going on right now, as I see it, is that they have kind of met in the middle in a lot of ways, but that Rauner is continuing to be stubborn, and I'm not exactly sure what his long game is here. He has gotten some concessions on workers' comp. He's gotten some concessions on property tax freeze. He's not budging right now, and he wants basically he and the Republicans have put forth this thing they call the Great Compromise Bill. They got a brand name for it,
but
it's their bill saying you've got to vote for the compromise, and they created it all by themselves. It's not a result of any negotiation. So there's a lot of headbutting going on down there right now, and I don't think there's any necessarily clear path toward a solution right now.
I want to bring up a couple of other Chicago-based topics. Chicago's North Street underpass may be closed at night because recently a 25-year-old woman was shot near there.
It's Ohio.
Ohio Street.
I said North Street, didn't I? Ohio Street, yeah. Right? What do you guys make of that? Is that a good idea? Should we just make it harder to get onto the parks or off the parks if you're on the wrong side?
Yeah,
but close that off.
Once you outlaw tunnels, then only tunnels will have outlaws. Wait, that can't be right. It seems to be a strange approach. This happened here. Well, you know, look at the South Side and all the different places these shootings have happened, and they don't close those down. I think it's a preposterous notion.
Well, you know, I don't know the statistics about what crime takes place in those tunnels. I think that the shooting that took place that prompted all this was not in the tunnel, but near the tunnel,
yeah.
Right? I guess the risk is if you lock them up and people are sort of stuck on the lakefront and they don't want to walk 5 or 6 blocks one way or the other to get to an overpass or a crosswalk, that they'll try to run across Lakeshore Drive and get killed. I don't know that that should guide our public policy. The park is supposed to be closed. I don't see any reason for not blocking off that method of ingress and egress myself. It doesn't seem like a big deal to me, but I guess it is.
I conflate the two. You know, I've got this problem with us allowing people in the underpasses of some of the streets under Lakeshore Drive.
The homeless people.
I don't think they should be allowed to live down there, and they do. They have little tent cities in the underpasses of some of the streets off of Lakeshore Drive, and I just think that is a breeding ground for garbage or fear or crime, and that those people should be removed.
So you would put them in the Ohio tunnel going to the lakefront?
You know, you keep doing that to me because I don't know what to do with them. You think, therefore, we should allow this other problem to continue. And I don't think I have to have the solution. I just know this is a problem. And to fix that problem, you bring a truck up, you put those people on that truck and their tents, and you get them the hell out of there. I don't think they should be allowed to
live
there.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised by your
feelings. I am a little bit, too. I know. And nothing's happened to me there either, except that I am if I was with my wife or, you say, young children, and we said, hey, we want to go to the lake of here in Chicago, the Great Lake, yay. Oh, we got to go past this spooky tent city under an underpass under Lakeshore Drive. That would keep me from wanting to do that.
I mean, again, I don't know. Are there problems associated with that? Have there been, like, muggings of people going by, or is it just
every
that you
day,
don't like the sight of it?
Hundreds and thousands of people are mugged and killed every day under the underpasses.
Okay. I would think it would almost be safer with them around.
Since I haven't done the research, I have to accede to it.
In this new world, that's true until you prove otherwise.
A lot of people say.
Yeah, millions of people are saying that.
People are saying that. Everybody's getting shot and killed down there.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll move on from that. I'm not getting any love on that, although I think that that's a problem that does need a solution. I don't know what the solution is. Does anybody want to say anything about the Van Dyke and other officers being charged and tried here in Chicago on the Laquan McDonald shooting? Steve, do you have any observations?
Well,
I hope
that they make strong cases against any of those officers who clearly violated policy and the law, and that they're punished for it.
I
if they didn't, then they're not. But it seems as if they did.
Now, Officer Van Dyke was on the stand yesterday. Am I
correct?
The pre-trial hearing. Yeah,
I had not heard what he did. He say anything?
He was on stand for a specific purpose, which was the admissibility of the statements that he had made to various supervisors after the event. So this had nothing to do with the other stuff. It strikes me as manifestly obvious when you look at that tape and you look at what those officers wrote in their reports that they lied.
Shocking! It's shocking fiction.
I hope they prosecute those guys to the full extent of the law. I think everyone who was on the scene and wrote a report that was a lie ought to be prosecuted. I said last week that I think there's a decent chance that Van Dyke might get off on his first degree murder charge, probably a stretch. But even any criminal charges, there's been this pattern around the country where officers charge. If you look at the Philando Castile case up in Minnesota, you covered that, I'm sure, a lot when you were doing hose up there. Have you seen the tape since then? The one that the dash cam that finally
came out. It's amazing,
shocking, and the cop, he was legitimately in fear of his life. I don't see it, but so you never know what a jury's going to do. But this case, I don't know how you get around the fact that their words are directly contradicted by what you see on that tape.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not a cop basher, but you look at that video. This guy shows up on the scene less than 20 seconds and empties his gun and reloads. I mean, into this kid who's clearly drunk.
Completely lost it.
And
he completely lost it.
Not a danger. The reports, as you mentioned, if for those of you who aren't aware of the reports, all said things like they were in imminent danger. He was attacking the cars.
Lunging at him, yeah.
And none of that was true.
Yeah. Well, no, he was. I think he did attack a police car. He stabbed the tire of the car. But Van Dyke pulled up well after all that had happened. He just pulled up on the scene, gets out of his car, and six seconds later, shooting.
And the report says that he turned and went after them with his knife raised in the air.
Complete
Nothing
lie.
Could be further from the truth. And so I think if you want to do institutional change, the charges have to go higher than just the people that wrote those reports, because their supervisors presumably saw the video, saw the report, and still didn't call the thing out.
That's a really good point, John.
They were going to bury it even further. Finally, Eric has concerns today about...
we
kind of buried our lead. Eric has a, quote, creeping feeling that he's done with the Cubs. He's done with the Cubs for a number of reasons.
Well, they're mediocre this year. First of all, the outrage.
Mediocre by last year's standards. They're above 500. That's awesome.
Are they above 500 still? I'm not sure they are.
Half a game behind Milwaukee.
They're up and down, up and down.
But they just don't look like they've got it going on. And this business, I guess they had to let Montero go after he complained about slow delivery from Arrieta that allowed seven
stolen bases.
He hadn't thrown out a person all year. He was leading, I think, almost setting a record for futility in throwing people out. So there's a baseball reason there, too.
And Schwarber going down to the minors. This happened a week ago. We talked about it, I think. Schwarber going down to the minors. And the pitching just isn't there. The hitting doesn't really seem to be there. Bryant now with his twisted ankle. It just does not feel like the team of destiny this year at all.
So you're walking away from them because they're a baseball team.
I'm not walking away from them, but it was a time away.
Maybe I can go to a game again.
Last year, toward the end of the year, I was like DVRing every game or watching every game I could. And this early in the year, this year, I just try to catch every inning. And now I just feel like Cubs are playing.
Yeah, but wasn't there something else that happened this week that made you angry about it?
And then this business with the Ricketts taking the Cubs to the White House.
Again,
they already went once. They're taking him back as a sort of political thing for Trump, and it just struck me as, first of all, I think that whole tradition needs to stop. You know, the president is no longer this avuncular figure that we all admired. I mean, and I'm not saying it was true with Obama either. The presidents are very polarizing people. Visits to the White House are politically fraught. Why do we involve our sports teams in these things?
Put them in the position where they have to decide, do I endorse or not endorse?
It's a statement. Like I saw Lester and Lackey, the two pitchers. They went to the Trump one, but they didn't go to the Obama one. Now, I guess maybe Lester had a family problem during the Obama one. But it's like everyone's trying to read into this their politics. And I kind of want them to keep their partisan politics out of sports, because it does poison it for them.
Yeah, but doesn't
that's
this...
why you go?
Yeah, that's
why
you
no
go.
Matter what,
thank you.
It's the president is bigger than the party.
You would go
or the moment.
You
absolutely.
Your son is on the Chicago
it's a
Cubs.
Photo op for
right.
them,
and he doesn't want to go. Are you mad at your son?
I would tell my son that in 20 years from now, he probably will regret that he didn't have a chance to go. Who wouldn't want to go in the Oval Office? I don't care who's sitting there.
Oh, I do.
Huh?
How about you, Scott Stannis?
Oh, I'd go in a minute, sure.
And your son, you would tell him, I guess it's the same thing, but I...
Respect the office, not... It doesn't matter.
I would tell my son to go on a hunger strike.
Yeah, Eric's going to go chain himself to the desk and refuse to eat until Trump's impeached.
To support you a little bit, I've surprised
thank you.
Myself. God. I take it back. No, I've surprised myself by how little Cubs baseball I have watched this year.
Yeah.
Less than ever. Any year. I'm at home, and I'm just not drawn to check out a game.
Well, last year was so magical.
John, I've been watching these guys since, you know, in the mid-70s when they won 15 games a year. And
Why are you begging off this year?
I don't know. I really don't know. I just have other things to do, and I'm not drawn to it.
I think we had this 100-year itch that got scratched, and where last year you had a sense of destiny, you couldn't resist it. This year, it's the less irresistible. They'll be in the playoffs. They may win it all again, but it's not the same journey this year.
I don't want to be one of those guys who, you know, is this existential crisis because now they won the World Series. What do I do? I really don't, but I'm not drawn to it like I used to be at all. I hope to get it back, but...
Let's do our recommendations. These are things the gang is watching, listening to, reading, or consuming.
I want to suggest a film called The Hero. It's starring Sam Elliott.
I've seen ads for it. Yeah. Is it good?
It's very good. And Elliott's sort of playing himself in a way, although this guy was a Western movie hero. He had one huge movie, I think, in the 80s or 70s. And now he's aging, and he's still hanging his cowboy hat, if you will, on that film. And it opens with this actor... who Elliot is portraying, doing voiceover work, which is what Elliot does. He does a lot of, so it sort of mirrors him in a bit. But it's kind of it's a nice showcase for Sam Elliott. It's a nice look at actors who are at the top of the world at one point, and then they keep living, you know, and what happens to them later. It's called The Hero.
Eric Zorn, you got something you like?
I do. It's called Miss Buchanan's Period of Adjustment. It's the latest episode of Revisionist History, which I have promoted, and I think you have too on this podcast. And this is Malcolm Gladwell's. I think it's the top-rated podcast on iTunes. The episode that just dropped this week is fascinating because it truly is revisionist history. He takes a look at Brown versus Board of Education, the 1954 Supreme Court decision, takes a look at the people involved, and he makes the case that this was, I mean, although obviously there's complete justice behind it, that the way it was implemented, the way it was written, ended up being really difficult and poisonous for Black Americans, because what happened was they ended up, a lot of these school districts that were forced to integrate fired all their Black teachers. And so Miss Buchanan's Period of Adjustment is based on a letter that was sent to a high-performing African-American teacher, like, we're not going to need you next year. And they also show that a lot of the research shows that Black teachers are very, very important to Black students, that their performance increases and so on. And so that getting rid of this entire generation of Black teachers has been devastating, and we still feel the effects today. Excellent podcast.
Can I insert this? Who is the Black congressman from the South, John, who is a civil
Lewis?
Rights? John Lewis was on the CBS Morning News today. They do a letter to yourself segment sometimes where they ask people to write something to their younger self based on what they've learned through their years. Very therapeutic thing, and they do it for the CBS Morning News in these well-produced pieces. And he writes as now a senior statesman back to himself as a young 20-year-old up-and-coming civil rights, you know, agitator or fighter. Agitator is maybe not the right word. And he, in the piece, reminded us that as a young man, he was not allowed to get a library card. He was not allowed to get a library card. Whatever your reason for integrating people, why would you not integrating people? Maybe you don't want to share a water fountain with them, but why wouldn't you let him have a library card? He wasn't allowed to do that.
Well, they didn't want Blacks in libraries. I mean, one of the interesting things that Gladwell gets into is that there was a follow-up lawsuit that went to the Supreme Court about that were filed by the teachers who were fired this way. And that decision, I mean, Brown versus Board of Education is one we're all proud of. But this suit, the Supreme Court dismissed. They wouldn't hear it. And he says that is one of the most shameful chapters in the Supreme Court history.
Wow. How about you, Scott Stennis?
Really interesting.
Yeah, no kidding. Thank you, Eric. Eric, Scott.
You know, I shuffle my music when I walk in or walk around the city, and an old friend popped up. And I hadn't heard him and made a concerted effort to listen to Daniel Lanois, who Eric may know. The name. He produced Bob Dylan, U2's great albums, Peter Gabriel, a great music producer, but he has a canon of his own work, which is ethereal and almost transformative. It's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful work. So Daniel Lanois, L-A-N-O-I-S, he's a Canadian musician, producer, and he is a genius, and I'd forgotten about him. So those of you out there, if you want to make your day more wonderful, listen to his work. Thank you.
Well, if you want to laugh, here's another movie recommendation. We watched last night. We were clicking around. Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, 1974.
Oh, my gosh.
Early Martin Scorsese. Before you knew who Martin Scorsese was, there was Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. It's an American comedy drama. I'm looking at the wiki on it just because it's got the names I wanted to remember. You had an Academy Award-winning performance here from Ellen Burstyn. Let me just double-check.
Amazing performance.
Ellen Burstyn wins the Academy. Diane Ladd is a Academy Award nominee. She doesn't win. Harvey Keitel is in it. Oh, my God. If in a movie you see somebody dating Harvey Keitel, you know it's probably not going to work out well for the two of them. Kris Kristofferson is in this movie. It's really funny. My wife and son watched it, and they laughed their fool heads off. And at the same time, you'll cry, and you'll be aghast at how hard it might be for a woman in the early 1970s to get ahead in this country. And it really captures a lot of that.
And the sitcom Alice is based on that.
Exactly.
Which really doesn't know service.
Which ran
no
for
service.
9 years.
Wow. Was this a streaming thing, or did you happen to run across it on TV?
Clicking through it on a TV. Griffin downloads movies, and every now and then we just start watching old ones.
Sounds like a pirating issue here.
No, I hope we're doing it legally. Do it legally, said the podcast. Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, 1974. And that wraps up this edition of the Mincing Rascals. Thank you, Scott Stannis.
Thank you.
Eric Zorn and Steve Bertrand on the show today, too. Our engineer is Ben Cortez. The Mincing Rascals are produced by Elif Garris. We will drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on the John Williams Show on WGN Radio.